Hello. Welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? I'm Owen Benjamin, and today's episode is brought to you by our friends at Blue Apron. Blue Apron is awesome because it's changed my wife's whole life. Literally, all she says now is like, are we doing Blue Apron for dinner? Because that, and by the way, she cooks it for me. It's insane because I help chop. They send you the freshest ingredients right to your door. It's affordable. It's less than $10 per person per meal. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. There's a lot of variety. We haven't repeated a meal yet. You choose from a variety of new recipes each week. Or you let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year. Oh, that's why. You'll never get bored. It's very easy. It's easy, but it's just challenging enough to be fun. That's the way I'll describe it. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients. It can be prepared in 40 minutes or less, and they taste really, really good. Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they'll make it right. And they do. I haven't had an issue with them for anything, but I have heard from listeners that they're awesome at customer service. So check out this week's menu at blueapron.com. And if you do blueapron.com/Owen, O-W-E-N, you get your first three meals for free with free shipping. I'm telling you, it's awesome. Go to blueapron.com/Owen. You'll love how good it feels. You'll love how good it tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. Do it. That's blueapron.com/Owen. Blue Apron is a better way to cook. It's awesome. Today, the theme of the show is pride. Pride. My brother and I did a show recently in our town of Saranac Lake, New York. And I noticed something. 8% of the entire town came to the show, which is a ridiculously high amount. And there was pride in the town. And I think that's one thing that I love about this town and what did eventually draw me here was the concept of pride, people taking pride in where they live, people taking pride in like winter. Most people see winter as a drag or a bummer. And here it's a sense of pride. And the history of Saranac Lake is fascinating because it started as a place where people went to be cured of tuberculosis. And Mark Twain lived here, Einstein lived here. Tons of huge thinkers and minds would come here because it was the only place. The air was so clean that people would be cured of tuberculosis. And so that's why this area is very unique. So I'm going to show you guys some really cool clips. Because I was having a... And pride can have a negative connotation too. And it can also be damaging, because if you have too much pride in something, sometimes you're not capable of change. It's this balance that I try to find in my life. One of my close friends was a Marine sniper, and during the Super Bowl party, we're getting hammered and talking about it, and I noticed something. It's interesting to me that, like, what if what you're really good at is killing people? There's thousands and thousands of Americans and British people and Australians and Africans and China. Yeah, Cap. There's millions of people in the world that aren't crazy people. They're not sadistic. They're not evil, but they're really good at killing people because that was their job in some form of military. And my friend's really good at killing people from far distances. He's a sniper. And now he's just back in normal life. And I wonder, I wonder, oh, someone just said, oh, I shaved my beard because I'm going to Los Angeles tomorrow. Anyway, and it's not cold there, so there's no point. And I was thinking about like pride. Like what if pride, in the Bible it says pride cometh before the fall, but how can you function without pride? Okay, so anyway, here is a clip of my brother doing stand up because he's opening for me. Here's my brother.
And so I went, and I remember other headlines around from back, along the way. But I went to the archives because, because right now people are kind of nervous because, like, it's constant insanity all the time, all the time. So this is from, this is 1950, but there's another, one of these is a great slogan. So this is from 1951. Tuesday, November 12th. No, Jesus, this is 1918. 1918. Can you see that? How about that headline? World War ends. That's a fucking headline. That is not skunk found in Petrova. And there was no way to get Twitter news. You're just like waiting. You're just waiting for someone to come here to be like, is the war over? And someone's like, well, we don't know yet. Like that dude, he's building an ice fortress.
So my brother is now. He did a whole set with newspaper headlines, and it was so funny because it's A, things haven't changed. People are always just trying to scare the shit out of you. And B, what the fuck was that? Oh, Amy just texted me. I don't know what the hell I was talking about. All right, here's another one. Total. Oh yeah, here's my brother again.
It says opossums, and it's a vicious picture of an opossum. Like the mouth is open, teeth are visible, sharp. It says opossums move north, but not here. Phew. For a minute there, I was a little nervous that I was going to wake up and have to deal with like an opossum attack.
There was another one. Oh, this one made me laugh.
Here's another headline, which made me, when this is 5 cents. Wow. So this is November 27th, 1900, 1950. Business is nearing normal as two-night blackout ends and storm spends its fury. It's a wicked headline. So the power went out. There's a lot. If you go to the archives, like every fifth one is something to do with snow, like snow, or and then down below, how about this? Does this sound vaguely familiar? Vicious red attack threatens collapse of Allied offensive. The Russians. Again. Okay, Austin, you gotta lock it up a little.
All right. Well, one, that made me laugh because he pointed out the fact that people have just been using the Russians as a way to scare people forever. And he's a teacher, so the way he handles hecklers sounds like a teacher. Like someone yelled at him and he just goes, Austin, gotta lock it up a little. And then the dude just shut up. All right, so here's a clip. This is what I have pride in this town. Because I've done Saranac Lake a bunch of times now, so I have to write new material for all these shows, because I don't want to just keep doing the same shit over and over again. All right.
I love it here because there's no class. There's no class. Like, there's no social pecking order. And it's very rare in the world to have what we have here. And it's because humans operate best with a common enemy. And it started with tuberculosis. And that's what got a lot of the biggest thinkers in the world to move to come here. Mark Twain, Einstein, all these people came to our little town here because tuberculosis put it on the map. And the thing about this area in the winter is you realize that once the winter comes in, their money doesn't matter. It's do you have a fucking shovel? And can you drink beers all day? That's all that matters. I find myself sometimes out amid bitters and bones, and I'm like talking to someone. I'm like, I literally don't know if I'm talking to a Rockefeller or a stonemason that just admitted to murdering a guy. Yeah, there he is. Literally killed a guy.
Yeah, so the Mason was there. I don't know if he actually killed a guy, but he seemed like he might have. That's the thing about social class that I think is very interesting. Money does matter, and social class matters and all that stuff, until you have a threat. And for those of you that have been following me for a long time, I don't know if you remember when I hosted the Art Director Guild Awards 2 years ago and the teleprompter broke. And that's where that clip from Anne Hathaway came, where she was like, is anyone else here a big Owen Benjamin fan now? That happened because I watched. It kind of broke down the barriers for me in Los Angeles. Well, a few things happened. I think one was when I used to date Christina Ricci, I saw a little of the inside life of what we consider opulent really is. And another was that award show, because you see fear in people. Snow has a way of making people unite. I just watched this wonderful movie, Arrival, last night. It was so good. And one of the themes is that, I'm not gonna say shit about Arrival. Just watch Arrival. But I love that, like, your money and your class and where you come from and who your daddy is doesn't matter at all once there's ice on the road. All right. Here's another one. Here's where pride is funny. This is about me and my son Walter. It's a new joke I'm working on.
Sauna, and then I start drinking beers, you know, and I was walking upstairs to grab a shower, and I'm drinking a beer, and Walter's there with Amy, and they look at me, and I look at him, and he looks at my dick, and I'm not here to brag, but compared to a 10-month-old baby, my dick is fucking enormous, and I could tell that he was kind of bummed out by it, and I was drinking my beer, and I was like, and then I realized how low I've sunken as a man. I was taking pride that I had a bigger dick than my 10-month-old baby.
All right, so that's a way that pride is funny, where you have pride in something legitimately ridiculous. Like thinking that, like, I swear to God, and my son has a fucking pretty big dick for a baby, like legitimately. And, but he's still a baby. And I was walking upstairs naked the other day and he saw my wiener and I felt a wave of pride where I was like, oh yeah, yeah, what's up now, bro? And he's 10 months old. And that's where pride's funny, when you have pride in the absurd. All right, here's another joke. What do we got here? Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. This is taking pride in what hurts you.
People get excited. This is the thing about the relationship with winter here. I think it's comparable to Stockholm Syndrome. This is the deal. It's when you're kidnapped or you have a captor, you start falling in love with your captor. And that's what happens here. Recently, my brother, a couple days ago, calls me at like 9 p.m. He's like, brother, we're going hiking. I'm like, it's pitch black. He's like, ampersand. We're hiking it. I'm like, dude, it's a blizzard. He's like, fuck yeah, man. We're doing it. We're climbing this thing tonight. And I was like, no, I'm going to pass. He's like, all right, bro. And then, like, I saw him 2 days later. He's like, you missed out, man. I'm telling you, you could have fucking died. And another thing about Stockholm Syndrome is this irrational feeling of hope. And the hope here is two hotels. No matter how bad it gets here, this hotel's coming, man. Where are they? Don't fucking ask questions. The hotels will be here. The two hotels will make it not cold anymore. And Ralph's head will be better.
Yeah, that's obviously an inside joke. But I've noticed that about Saranac Lake and the whole Adirondack Mountains in general. Is the winter is so brutal that you're like, Yeah, I'm going to hike this mountain naked at night, and I'm going to love it, and we're going to die. And then the other thing is our town, everyone keeps saying that these two hotels are going to get built. And it's almost like a mantra. Like, people just keep being like, yeah, the hotels are coming, man. And maybe it was a dick move for me calling him out on that, but that's my job. I call the shit out. And then skiing. This is a joke about skiing. Oh, yeah, because another thing people have pride in is how cheaply they live. You'll see in the joke.
The way people talk about powder here, if their phones were tapped, the DEA would be breaking down their door. And it's like, yo, man, we got the best powder in last night. So I gotta go solo on this one. This powder's pretty extreme. It's powder day, bro. Powder day. Like, the DEA's listening. That sounds insane, right? And people love skiing so much. There's such a duality in this town of extreme frugality. Is that a word? Where it's like people brag about not needing shit. You know? People are like, yeah, man, I survive on a dollar a year. Like, what is it? Yeah, I live in a lean-to. And, you know, we're heated by rabbit shit. And, you know, we make pottery for carrots. And I'm like, what about those? I'm like, how much are your ski bindings? He's like, $2,000.
Yeah, that's, this area, it's every area has something like that, where it's like a lot of people brag about how little they live off of, you know, where they're like, yeah, man. I got a kerosene heater. I got a truck that starts. I got cold beer in the fridge. What else do I need? And everyone has something that they spend stupid money on, whether it's like your boat, your hunting bow, or like your sports memorabilia. Here it's skiing equipment or like ice climbing shit. Yeah, but simple living always has that little element of like, yeah, but I have a $9,000 bong. Like, what? All right, only a couple more, and then we'll wrap things up. What was another one I wanted to show you guys? Oh, yeah. There's another one.
So many activities here are based around drinking, like, subtly. It's so funny. My buddy, Justin, was telling me about maple syrup. You know, he's like, yeah, man, you got to get into maple syrup. You got some good maple trees on your property. Yeah, that sounds awesome. What do you do? He's like, you know, you get like 5,000 pounds of syrup, and you cook it for like a month, and you got to stare at it the whole time with your friends. And then you get a quart of maple syrup. I'm like, so it's about 1,000 man hours for a quart of maple syrup. He's like, yeah, man, that's a good time. And that, at that point, I know why you make maple syrup. It's so that you have an excuse to stand with your friends staring at a fire for a month straight, pounding beers. And I'm in. I'm fucking in.
Here's another drinking joke.
The funniest thing about the winter is you can always tell who has a DUI. It's a dude walking. Because in the summer, you're like, oh, it's someone enjoying a day. Maybe he loves birds. But in the middle of a winter storm, you see a dude, you're like, that guy's got a fucking DUI. He's just walking.
All right, that was some highlights from the show. I can just move this over here. The audio is going to be all crazy for this one. This is my handy dandy little recorder here. What else I want to talk about? I'm on tour. My night's going to be insane, guys. I drive to New York City at midnight. It's a 5-hour drive, so I can get on a plane to go to Los Angeles, where I'm doing a show at the Hollywood Improv. And then Thursday morning, I do Heidi and Frank in the morning radio show. And then I drive to Sacramento, which is a 7-hour drive. I do a show. Then I do two shows Friday, two shows Saturday. Sunday morning, I drive back to Los Angeles, do a show at the Hollywood Improv. And then Monday, I fly to Raleigh, North Carolina, where I do a Valentine's Day show. And then Wednesday, I fly back to New York, get my car, drive 5 hours north to Saranac Lake. So that's what I'm facing this next week. But I, you know, I've earned it. I've earned the amount of abuse I'm about to go through because these last couple weeks have been magical. I've just been cross-country skiing every day and doing periscopes and working out and hanging with my family and just, you know, perusing Instagram. It's been awesome. But now I got to face reality that I don't live in a lean-to. Oh, someone just, I'm periscoping now, so someone just wrote me a bunch of hearts. Yeah, I will get those coasters out, I promise. Make sure to beach run periscope. Yeah, I'm going to run on the beach, and I will show everybody. It'll be fun. Can I do more podcasts with Q when I see Q? Yeah, but for those of you that became a fan of mine because of the Impractical Jokers, just know that most of the time I'm not with them. So if your intent is to always get the inside scoop on the Jokers, I'm not your guy. Because I've noticed that. Some people will write me on Instagram and stuff, be like, yo, so how's Sal today? I'm like, how the fuck should I know how Sal is today? But I love them. But I'm my own guy that I'm not anywhere near them most of the time. And thanks for all the good love on Patreon. Patreon.com/WDTL. And our other podcast, Case Closed, Beers Open. I saw you on Doug Benson's podcast. Yeah, Doug's great. Doug's great if you want to smoke an unbelievable amount of weed in a very short amount of time. Did you get my email? I will check my email soon. Sorry, I've been really busy. I hate when people say that. Oh yeah, your bibs are coming soon, Jennifer. I promise. Because Walter's been teething, so I've been doing some night duties. Amy's been a champ. She lost her voice. I got you guys. I'll send you your stuff. I have no one that works for me, so like, I have to do it all solo. So just know that everything will be done. I'll get you your stuff. And just, you know, might take a little time. Because as far as my priorities go, I go family, health, stand-up. You know, doing the podcasts, then sending the shit out, and then sleep. I hope today wasn't a depressing podcast. I wanted to talk a lot about pride. Gay pride. Someone said that they thought this was about gay pride. It's interesting how the word pride has been so adapted by gay people to the point where when you just say pride, people assume you mean gay. I'm okay with that, I guess. I just think it's interesting. It's almost like if someone took another one of the deadly sins, like lust, and someone's like, oh, you mean you're talking about Owen? Like, imagine if I was so horny that someone was like, oh, today's podcast is about lust. And people are like, oh, you mean Owen Benjamin? You're like, how does he get all of lust? It's like, that guy gets boners. He gets fucking boners. I just don't know how one group can take an entire emotion. But I guess that's the thing. I guess that's the frustration, I think, is how politics have taken over cultural things. That you can't really debate anything cultural anymore without politics being involved. It's almost like the new religion. I think as much as I always made fun of religion growing up, because I was raised Catholic, which means I'm agnostic, it's kind of like a lot of Jews are the same way. You just kind of like, you're Jewish, so that means you're like, maybe there's a God. I don't know. That's how a lot of Catholics are. Just put a dollar in the basket. And, but religion was always tied to everything growing up. That's why I made fun of it. I used to make fun of religion all the time. And, because you couldn't say anything. You couldn't talk about sex or anything. You couldn't talk about Michael Jackson without religion, someone saying something about religion. And then religion crumbled. Big time. I don't know, not worldwide, but in America, religion is just, there's not. No one goes to church. Like, almost nobody. So, but the thing about humans is when something like that goes away, they have to fill it with something else. Because we don't change. Our brains didn't evolve in one generation. It takes thousands of years to move a little tiny bit. We still need that group mentality. where everyone sits in their pews and just listens to exactly what someone says and they believe every word without questioning it. That's the role of religion. The religion is the strong man, right? Jesus, your priest, your preacher, the Pope, the strong man. What he says is, right? So when you take away the strong man, guess what? People need a new strong man. Welcome Donald Trump, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome Vladimir Putin to the stage. You can't take away the human need for something that is perceived as an absolute truth. And this isn't politics. This is fucking human nature. How do people not see that? Right now, if you go back in my podcast a year ago, all the shit I was talking about is now being reported by the Washington Post and the New York Times. Over a year ago, when I was talking about why Donald Trump's popularity existed, why it was growing, and the cultural reasons, not politics, culture. Now it starts, someone recently just did this long thing for The Guardian about poor white people on heroin in trailer parks and how the concept of privilege only infuriates them because it doesn't really exist for them. This is a very left-wing progressive news source, and it was written beautifully, and I loved it. I retweeted it. It was great. I was talking about that a year ago. Where the fuck were these people then when they were saying, oh, white privilege, right? White privilege, white privilege. White privilege, of course it does exist. For 95% of white people, it doesn't. And so when you push a narrative on people that's wrong, kind of like the Catholic Church, that you know, we shouldn't eat shellfish, and if you put your dick in someone's ass, you go to hell. I mean, these things are blatantly not true. People then crave a strong man somewhere else. And so when everyone says, oh, how can Donald Trump say these things and people just believe them? Because they want to. They want to believe them. How can your priest stand up there and say, you know, if you are this, you are a sinner. If you are this, you are a sinner. I love this new show, The Young Pope on HBO. It's amazing because it doesn't demonize the Catholic Church. And it doesn't put it on a pedestal. It just shows it for what it is. It's people that believe and they want to believe and they want to do good, but they also have no life experience. You know, to go from priest to bishop to cardinal to pope, most of the time you've never kissed a woman. You've never held a baby. There's a great scene where Jude Law drops a baby because he's never held one. And the lack of life experience is, I think, where most of their shortcomings came from. You know, like condoms are a sin. Of course, condoms are a sin if you've never had a date. You know, most things wrong with the world. And there is, I can't say wrong, because that's a judgmental thing. But like most people don't understand other people's perspectives because they don't take the time to think like, what's it like being this other person? What's it like being someone who joins ISIS? What's it like being someone who is against abortion or for abortion? Like what? And every person has a right to think how they think. Now the group has a right to tell them to fuck off. And that in the democratic world that we live in, we can vote and say the majority of us are pro-choice. But I see where you're coming from. If you are from a culture where you are very, you know, you have to believe these things to get through your day, who the fuck is this San Francisco hipster to tell anyone what to think? And I think no one will listen now, but in a year, New York Times and the Washington Post will start reporting about other perspectives and how there are honor cultures. This podcast deals with the sense of pride. And I think a lot of people don't either live their life full of pride or live their life with no pride. And that's a major divide, you know, where there's certain people that think this is my land, this is my dirt, this is my family. I will protect them. I will do anything for them. I will get a fucking gun. I will protect the life in my daughter's belly. If she gets pregnant, I want that child. She should want that child. This is my fucking area. And that way of thinking works if it's the environment for that way of thinking. Now, there are other people that live in more urban environments where it's like, I have police, I have firefighters, I have every type of tribe in the world right around me. There's Armenians and gay guys and Jews and black people from Africa and black people from America and British people and Irish people and all these people surrounding you. So you know you can't think that way, because if everybody thought that way, everyone would be ripping their face off like chimpanzees. And so you have to think groupthink. You have to think more group. And that's when the left and the progressives make sense, because they think, don't say this huge list of words because we have to appeal to all these people. You know, if you say this word, one of those people is going to freak out. And when you're in a tight area and all the people are right there, you have to think lowest common denominator as far as not offending people. That's when political correctness exists and then eventually gets out of control, is you think, how can I not offend anybody, right? That's when things get ridiculous, where like the word fat is now hate speech, or saying hitting on a girl is an act of patriarchy. Like, that's insane. Just like I feel it's insane to tell a woman what she can and can't do with her womb. These are, to me, crazy things, but they come from being in a highly specific culture that doesn't understand other cultures, right? If you're in a small farm in the middle of nowhere, there's a horrific winter, and everyone there is pretty much the same religion from a similar background, and there's not a lot of technology, and your income is from agriculture or mining or something like that, you will have a culture that has a lot of pride that says, this is my land. I will defend it. I will fucking keep it safe. I will keep other people that aren't like us out of here, because historically, when they came, those people died or they like lost their farms. You know, I was joking a lot about on Twitter about the Civil War, about how the Super Bowl was basically the Civil War and that Atlanta hasn't been this on fire since Sherman's March to the Sea. And someone wrote, do you think some people take offense on behalf of other people without asking if they're offended? Absolutely. That's one of the biggest problems with political correctness, is people jump to I call them empathy bombs, where they jump to a conclusion based on a good thing in their heart. They think, don't make fun of Mexicans in this manner because they're people too. Meanwhile, the comedian just did a tour in Mexico and knows exactly what makes Mexicans laugh. But that person hadn't. And now you're running into a situation where there is really no right and wrong. From an outside perspective, I can say it's wrong to assume this much, to make this countless amount of assumptions nonstop. But the person, the PC police person, is trying to do good. They think they're doing good, but in reality, they're not. Because all it does is shut everyone up so that no one can talk. No one can work out their right to speak. If you love the woman, speak without what you want. Oh, shit, I missed that one. I'm sorry. Someone just wrote something that sounded cool that I wish I had responded to. But I am a comedian. I get it. This isn't exactly a comedy podcast. I get it. It's more a culture podcast, because I think I'm very fascinated by culture and people and intent, motivation, you know, what makes, not because I want power or because I want to change people. I just want to know these things. I don't know why. I just do. I want to understand people. And I think that's why I've been so drawn to the road of going from city to city to city to city. And that's the benefit of not being super famous, is I have to entertain the culture that exists there. It isn't like a bunch of my fans come to see me who have been fans of mine for 10 years. You have more than a right to say what you want of you're with a woman. You have more than a right to say what you want of your... I don't understand that one. That's okay. I should wrap this up soon. I gotta go skiing. But I just think the biggest divide in the world is... I did a video about 9 months ago called the Love Algorithm. And your perspective really keeps me going to your shows and supporting you. Thanks, Jennifer. The Love Algorithm, you're interested in the world around you. Yeah. Check this out. Check out this theory, the Love Algorithm. I think that people haven't changed as far as being good or bad or moral or immoral or, you know, whatever. I think what it is because a similar thing happened with the invention of the printing press. When the printing press was invented, the world went through massive upheaval because it's tough to imagine a world where every single book had to be handwritten. So books were only in the hands of the ultra rich because someone had to physically handwrite a book for you. Like if you read Pride and Prejudice or War and Peace or the Harry Potter, imagine every Harry Potter book, someone had to physically write out every word. That meant that books were not very accessible. Information was not very accessible. The concept of another person's way of thinking was not very accessible. So when the printing press happened, you know, quick to follow was the Martin Luther and the Protestant Reformation, because he could get out his information to a huge amount of people. What was happening then was the Catholic Church was selling indulgences, which is insanely corrupt, where they would allow rich people to kill women, fuck children, whatever they did that was insane, and they would pay the church money so that they would go to heaven. You could fuck kids and then kill the kids. This is all real. I'm using crazy examples because this is real. And so then they'd pay the priest and then they'd go to heaven. And so Martin Luther had a problem with this. He wrote out 95 theses, his 95 things that he wanted changed. And he didn't even want to leave. He didn't even want to leave the church. He just wanted these things changed. Church kicks him out. It's called the Diet of Worms. That's when they kick him out. He starts his own church. Protestant means protest. Protestant. Basically, it means the protest religion. So he translates the Bible into a language that the commoner could read. No longer Latin. The common language, right? Starts printing them. Printing, printing, printing. And I, too, have a fascination with history. So, oh, cool. So all these peasants who have been told that they're sinners Sunday after Sunday, and that the rich are in control, and that they are indentured servants, and they're slaves. And now all of a sudden they read that Jesus was poor, and that Jesus loved the poor, and that Mary Magdalene was a prostitute. And they start saying, "What the fuck?" When it says right here, it's easier to fit a camel through the eye of a needle than a rich man into the kingdom of God. That means that the meek shall inherit the earth. Well, what the fuck? So you know what happened? War. It's called the peasant revolts. Hundreds of thousands of deaths. Also, what happened was tons of breakout churches. We had the Baptists, the Anabaptists. The Anabaptists were fucking insane, right? These people that probably had schizophrenia, who had voices in their head, started their own church because they thought they had God in their head, right? So now you have absolute chaos because all these ideas are swirling around and people don't know how to comprehend them. Eventually, shit calms down. Everything kind of goes back to normal, and a lot of good things came from it, to be honest with you. And I feel like the internet is doing something similar. So I wrote something called the Love Algorithm, where I said that proximity divided by intimacy equals the amount someone will hate you. Hear me out. If intimacy doesn't change, like I am very intimate with a lot of people, a lot of cultures. I've performed in Miami in front of a bunch of Cubans. I performed in Texas in front of a bunch of Mexicans, Texas in front of a bunch of rich oil people, Texas in front of a bunch of college kids, Chicago, Minneapolis, Iraq, Kuwait, California, London, you know, all these places. And the thing that you get when you're on that role is intimacy of culture. Kind of like why you see politicians make such horrific missteps when calculating polls and stuff. When they say the Hispanic vote. Okay, Hispanic vote doesn't mean anything. Do you think a Cuban wants the same thing as a Mexican? Like a Mexican immigrant that just came into El Paso. Do you think he's anything like a Cuban that came in on a raft from fucking Castro? No, nothing alike. Okay, so when you develop these intimate relationships with cultures and you know them, it makes you hate them less. It always makes you hate them less. The more you know about someone, the less you hate them. I grew up not hating, but thinking that like born-again Christian hillbillies with guns were a bunch of dickheads. And then you get to know them. You start performing in West Virginia and, you know, you do a college in Tallahassee and you realize that it's just a different culture, that they're not dickheads, that they just have a way of speaking and a way of living that is different than yours. Just like black culture, you know, like I used to be scared of gang members. I'm way more scared of just like weird looking dads with mustaches with that creepy face who drive vans. Most gang members that I've hung with in inner cities are not going to kill you. They don't want to kill you. They're CEOs of companies that require murder. You know what I'm saying? Like they'll kill someone to get like, if someone disrespects them and they have to, or to get more, business acquisitions. It's literally just a high stakes mergers and acquisitions business proposal. That's most gang members. So if they're hanging with a comedian, I'm not trying to get on their turf or I didn't fucking disrespect their mother. They're awesome to hang out with. There's no fear there. Okay. So the love algorithm. So the amount someone hates you is proximity divided by intimacy. So back in the day before the internet, you wouldn't know these people existed. You may read something in a book, you know, you're reading Huck Finn, someone says nigger, you think, well, those people sound like assholes, right? But you're not around them. Proximity is how physically close you are to someone, where someone's in your face telling you what they think. Now, the less you know about that person, the more you fucking hate them for it, right? So the internet is increased proximity with no increase in intimacy. That increases hate. It's a basic fucking algorithm that I came up with. I don't know if I can patent it for anything, but like, okay, let's say you're now on your Twitter feed or Yahoo or Instagram or all this stuff, and you see, let's say you're kind of left, like you're kind of liberal. You're a kind of liberal guy. People should be able to do what they want. I like Bill Clinton. You know, Obama seemed all right. That's cool. Now, all day long, you're getting bombarded. I'll give you two examples. One is how crazy the right starts appearing. When you start seeing, you know, we got to fucking take out these Middle Easterners. We got to fucking, you know, abortion's murder, man. Fucking Donald Trump is the best. But you start hearing these, like this really intense rhetoric. And you're like, those dudes are fucking scary, right? But you don't really know them that well. Same with the extreme left. You start seeing all these like marches for what you believe to be no actual thing. What are you marching for? Awareness. You just broke a Starbucks. Awareness. Awareness of what? Awareness. And you see the left saying that you can't use words like, if you say, where are you from to an Asian, that's offensive. Or you say like, man up is an act of patriarchy. Like these things start driving you crazy, but that's because you don't really know them that well either. Like, and that is why the internet is causing this great divide in humans. Because the intimacy hasn't increased, but the proximity has. Proximity divided by intimacy equals hate. But the reverse is true. Intimacy divided by proximity equals love. So the more you understand someone and the farther away they are, the more you love them. Even when they're close, you love them. You're like, but distance makes the heart grow fonder, right? And the internet has made no distance. That's why I take the time to discuss these things, because I genuinely think I'm making the world better. Not that any human can change the world, but like no one likes living in a divided world. Nobody. And my trip to the United Kingdom was so great because I got to see a world that doesn't care about race. They care about religion or soccer teams. You know, there's a great joke I heard. One Irishman says to another, "Are you Catholic or Protestant?" And he says, "I'm an atheist." And the other one says, "Yeah, but which one don't you believe in?" Tribalism, right? Understanding tribes requires intimacy. Hang out with these people. Listen to these people. Don't talk about Trump supporters until you fucking hung out in Arkansas at a gun range. Don't talk about pussy liberal progressive cucks unless you've went to a fucking rave at a castle owned by a gay couple. They're awesome. You know what I mean? Like, there is no this venomous incivility that we are treating each other with is pointless, because if people really knew each other better and understood that certain parts of the country need guns, certain parts don't. Certain parts of the country are very religious, certain parts aren't. Some parts of the country, their needs were not met by President Obama at all. And so they didn't want to vote for someone that was anything close to him. In other parts of the country, Obama might as well have went door to door shaking their hands, saying, "Here's more shit." And then there's part of the country that said, "Where's my white privilege? I'm on heroin and my husband's in Afghanistan and I'm living in a fucking trailer park and you're telling me I'm fucking privileged." That's all I'm saying. Okay, that's going to wrap it up. You can go to hugepianist.com for tour dates and whatnot. Not known about you for long, but you're already up there as one of my favorite comedians. Thank you. Yeah, I'm like one of those known unknowns. Like, I think the ultimate metaphor of my career is my face is painted on the mural of the Hollywood Improv with the greats, but it doesn't look anything like me. Thank you for the insight. No problem. Can I sing soon? Yeah, I'll do an all music podcast soon, or an all music Periscope soon. I just want to get this rocking. Pride and Prejudice is going to be the name of this episode. Piano. Yeah, I'll play you some piano. You got to let me do this human nature shit, though, because it makes me really happy. And if you go back to my first episode of Why Didn't They Laugh, that's the whole reason I started doing this. You're low profile, but once people find you, you're everywhere. Yeah, that's kind of it. I'm like the cockroaches. You know, you never know they're there until you start looking for them, and then they're there. That always happens to me. Like, people are like, "You're my new favorite comic. Like, are you new?" And then they start Googling me, and they're like, "You were on Punk'd 11 years ago?" And I'm like, "Yeah, man, I'm in something called the artisan class." That means where I'm like special forces. We're like, if you need a comedian, I'm your guy. If you need an actor to play this certain part, I'm your guy. I'll do a good job. I'm not great at becoming famous or staying famous. It's not a skill I have because I'm not good. I think one of the things that I'm learning from the show The Young Pope, I'm not good at intrigue. Like, The Young Pope on HBO by Jude Law. Or Jude Law, fame is overrated? Yeah. Fame is, yeah, but, you know, there's parts of it that I would want more of. Like, I would want to not feel like every month I have to make sure that I'm making enough money for all my bills, you know? If you're famous enough, you can do two shows and you're set for, like, 6 months. But that comes from more fame, I guess. But I'm fine. But The Young Pope never knew his parents, so he has this hole inside of him. So he's really good at intrigue, where he never shows his face to the crowd. You know, he has that distance. Distance makes people want you more, you know? That, like, intrigue. Like, who is this guy? I was so fucking loved by my parents. Like, my parents loved me. Where, like, literally, someone could be like, "Here's the secret of the world, of the universe. If you keep it to yourself, you will have all the power in the universe." And I'm like, "Hey guys, you guys want to hear the secret of the universe?" I'm good at keeping secrets if it's like a secret that could hurt someone else or whatnot. But like I'm writing a book right now, and I have a publisher and I got an advance And I read a chapter that I'm working on my last episode. And my wife is like, I don't think they're going to want you to do that. I'm like, why? They're like, she's like, because like, you should release it all at once as the book. That's why they're paying you. And I'm like, yeah, but I just really wanted to share it with the people. And I think that quality of mine will always hinder me from being a huge star. And I'm okay with that because I'm insanely fucking good at stand-up and comedy and shit. And my family loves me. And my town loves me. And I have enough friends. You know, but I would like my own ship. I wouldn't mind my own country, an island. You know, sometimes I look at islands and I'm like, I really want that. Oh, a good fucking TV show right now is called Taboo. Like my favorite actor right now. And I always blank on his name, which is hysterical because he's like my favorite actor. Tom Hardy. Fucking love Tom Hardy. Love. And that dude's the star of an FX show called Taboo. At first, I'm like, I can't jerk off to this. And then I realized, do you play video games? No. I had Sonic the Hedgehog as a kid. And that was the last video game I really got into. But I got into it big time. I mean, I lost some months of my life deep into that one. Apart Taboo was filmed 5 minutes away from me. Oh, that's cool. Nice. Are you guys enjoying the hang? I'm going to wrap up this podcast. That's going to do it for this episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? The last part was very rambly. But the first half was all about comedy with real clips. So you got that. And then I started rambling. You can support the show by, you know, using our sponsor, which is blueapron.com/Owen. My wife literally cooks Blue Apron all the time now. We're obsessed with it. And it's the best food ever. Brought right to your door, free shipping, blueapron.com/Owen. You'll get 3 free meals. And food is very important to maintain your health. It's a fact. And it's awesome that, oh, here's one side effect of Blue Apron. My wife is now way better at cooking. I was always more the cook of the family. Like, I'd always cook stuff, and she'd be, like, kind of blown away. She'd get horny. You know, she'd start rubbing my hammer. She'd be like, oh, look at you. You minced the pork. I'm like, yeah, I minced it. She doesn't even eat pork, but she just likes that I minced it. Or I'll chop up some, like, veggies and stir-fry that shit. Throw on some Indian spices. Yeah, I travel. I'm friends with the dude from the Big Bang Theory. I know shit. You know, and then she'd start rubbing my hammer. Okay, now that we have Blue Apron, we get detailed instructions how to cook all this food, right? And so now she's blowing me out of the water with cooking. She knows how to use creme fraiche. Creme fraiche? And so I can't say enough about Blue Apron. They're awesome. blueapron.com/Owen. Help support the podcast. Help support your family. Help support your health. And then also patreon.com/WDTL. You can pledge anything from $1 to $25 a month. You get more shit. More of my like rants or like talks with my mom, stuff like that. Oh, it's not available in the UK. I looked that up. I'm sorry. But my book will be. Yeah, what's up? And so becoming a Patreon member helps. And if not, you don't have to. It's cool. And you can oh, shit. I had to read one email. Oh, man. It's all good. I'll do another one. But you can email me at whydidn'tthelaugh@gmail.com. This one dude emailed me because I was making fun of the Budweiser commercial during the Super Bowl about the immigrant. Because this dude worked for Anheuser-Busch, and he wrote me this long thing about how fucking funny that ad is if you know like a lot more about the company. Oh my God, it was so funny. fuck it. All right, hugepianist.com. Pianist. If you spell that wrong, you go down a gay rabbit hole you'll never forget. Thank you for listening. I love you guys. Peace.